From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When it's time to report a remarkable story, there's buzzing through, and then there's settling in, embedding. Last year, little Austin, Indiana, suddenly became a big story for the epidemic of opioid abuse and then HIV that swept through the tiny rural Indiana town. It seemed so unlikely. In fact, it was just a tell of what's going on across this country. The news media moved on. NPR's Kelly McEvers went back to settle in. Now she tells the up-close story of opioids and Austin, Indiana. This hour on Point, Kelly McEvers, embedded. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you want the detail? Do you want to know it from your town? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A listener advisory here. There will be graphic description of drug use during the course of this show. In fact, we're going to hear some right now. Kelly McEvers has come out with this reporting series. It's called Embedded. It's going to be delivered as an NPR podcast, spending real time in Austin, Indiana, with drug users there very intimately with what they were up to or being rolled over by. I want to play, this is longer than our usual clip here, more than a minute right here, of drug users Jeff and Joy in a drug house in Indiana, in Little Austin. Kelly is there with them in the drug house, and here from Embedded, they are showing her how they cook down the prescription painkiller Opana to inject it.
You want to see how it's cooked?
Yeah, sure. So I walk into the bedroom. Jeff and Joy are in there, and we close the door. And Joy shows me this round, jagged piece of aluminum. It's the bottom of a Coke can.
Okay. So here's our infamous can, which has been used to death.
Joy puts this tiny white triangle on the piece of aluminum. It's just a piece of a pill of Opana. They say they just cut it with scissors.
This little piece right here.
Is that really a quarter?
No, that's an eighth.
Sorry.
That's just a little piece of nothing.
Yep.
A little piece of nothing.
And then Joy takes a pair of fingernail clippers and clamps them onto the aluminum. Then she takes a lighter and starts heating up the pill from below. Right away, I can start to see this hard white coating kind of float off the piece of the pill.
Oh, okay. It looks like plastic.
A lot of people...
It's like rubber.
This is the coating that the drug company put on the pill to keep people from crushing it up and snorting it. And Joy says the idea at this point is to cook the pill until it gets to be the color of whiskey.
What do you think, Jeffrey? Toast the top a little bit there now?
Yeah.
Kelly McEvers from Embedded, the new reporting podcast series from NPR. They're in Austin, Indiana. It gets more intimate. We'll hear that. But there's a taste from right in the heart of the opioid epidemic that's sweeping this country and swept one Indiana town. Joining me now from NPR West in Culver City, California, is Kelly McEvers. You know her as the co-host of All Things Considered, and from her years of award-winning reporting as a correspondent for NPR in the Middle East and beyond, she is now the host of the new NPR podcast, Embedded, which delivered its first report on Austin, Indiana, today. You can find links to the podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Kelly McEvers, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
What are you up to with this project, Embedded?
You know, as a reporter in the Middle East, I had some opportunities to be embedded with the U.S. military. My first assignment in the Middle East was Iraq, but it was 2010, and it was a time in Iraq when military embeds were not the only way for us to do our jobs. There was a time in Iraq when things were so dangerous, frankly, for reporters, that the only way to go out and do any stories was to be embedded with the military. And of course, when you did that, as we all know, you got one perspective on the story, right? You got the military's perspective, the story that they wanted to tell. But a lot of times, I know a lot of reporters were frustrated. You know, what's on the other side? Who's the guy who's just lobbed that mortar into this military base? Why did he do it? What motivates him? And so by the time I got to Iraq, the situation was such that we could go out into Iraq and answer some of those questions. And so for me, this project is a little bit about turning this idea of embedded on its head. I decide what the story is, and the people who I'm with can decide what the story is that they want to tell. And it's not such a controlled and scripted thing. So for me, the idea of this project is to take something that's happening in the news, a headline, something that's come through in your news feed, something you read in the paper, and it's something you still have a lot of questions about. Mm-hmm. And so you say, all right, well, wait a second. How an HIV outbreak in 2015 in the United States of America, how did that happen? I mean, I think
in a little tiny town in very rural southeast Indiana, sort of Mayberry country, maybe.
Right. And so I think we all have these kinds of questions when we hear the news. We do a good job on our news programs of giving context, of talking to officials, of talking to the people at the center of the story. But still, sometimes you're not satisfied. At least I know I'm not. And so I thought, why not take that curiosity and go to the place and get down on the ground and stay there as long as it takes to answer some of those questions.
There's a bridge maybe embedded from your time in Iraq right into rural Indiana, where you talk with an Iraq veteran named Jeff. This is at the drug house in Austin, Indiana. And says he was injured in a Humvee accident back in 2008, came back to the U.S., and like now how many others became hooked on pain pills. Hear from Embedded, that exchange, Kelly McEvers, and from the drug house, Jeff, the veteran.
They had me on Percocet while I was there, so, yeah.
Starting point.
Yeah, that's what got started.
And then what?
Then they moved me up to Old Panos. The doctor said, we got this new pill, I'll try it, and it'd probably help with the pain better. And she said, Old Panos.
Had you ever heard of it before?
No, never had. Nobody around here had.
Nobody had heard of it at first, but then slowly Jeff started noticing that other people were taking Opana.
And then how were other people getting them?
They just going to the doctors.
Yeah. So they knew about it. They're like, oh, there's a thing.
There's a new one, yeah. Started going to pain clinics and...
And saying, my back hurts.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. I've tried this new pill, and it's Opana. They'd ride it out for them.
And pretty soon, they're crushed and boiled and injected, and we've got an HIV epidemic in the American heartland. I mean, it is interesting, Kelly. You and I, turns out, both from towns in central Illinois, not so far from Austin, Indiana.
Not so far.
You and I both have reported all over the world and spent lots of time in some pretty out-of-the-way or tough places. What do you think you learned in Austin about this epidemic? Everybody's talking about this. The president talking about it this week. From your up-close time with these people that you didn't know from 30,000 feet, watching from afar as a co-host of All Things Considered.
We learned a lot. I mean, one of the questions we had just was, what is Opana? I mean, I think we've heard a lot about heroin. We've heard a lot about OxyContin, Vicodin, Percocet, as Jeff mentioned. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we wanted to know is, what is this particular painkiller? And why is it this painkiller that people are using in this particular area? So that was one question we wanted to answer. And it, you know, as Jeff said, it just sort of turned out that that's what people were getting from doctors at these so-called pill mills. These, mm-hmm. as we know, are places where people give cash for prescriptions, but also eventually that street dealers were bringing Opana from nearby cities. Austin is very close to Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Sort of in between Indianapolis and Louisville, south of Bloomington, Indiana.
It's closer to Louisville.
Yes,
really.
Indeed.
And also from cities like Detroit, so it was just what so happened to be on the street. At one point, I remember asking Jeff, like, why not do heroin? As we all know, it's cheaper. It's what a lot of people do switch to after they've become addicted to pills. It's definitely in the area. And he said, you know, Opana is just stronger. It's a stronger high. And you can actually regulate it. I mean, as you heard in that opening scene, people are cutting the pill very precisely. and then measuring out the water they use to cook it very precisely. And then they actually divvy it up very precisely, yeah, depending on how much money they put down on it. Right. So if you put $5 on it, you get this much. If you put $20 on it, you get this much. So in this strange way, it can be. I mean, there are people who've overdosed on Opana, definitely. But it can be safer in this strange way. You don't see as many overdoses when people use it this precisely. And you know exactly what you're getting, unlike with heroin.
And one of those, ironically, Joy, one of those, I guess, addicted here, and one of those, turns out, with HIV, used to work.
No, she does not have HIV.
Excuse me. Okay, does not. Let's be clear about that. Sorry. But
absolutely.
Used to work as a nurse at a hospital there, and here she is from Embedded talking with Kelly McEvers about how she got into all this and her shame.
Once my adrenaline, you know, had worn off, I realized that I was in bad shape.
She knew she'd hurt her back again really bad. She kept taking prescription pain pills, then she got hooked. At one point, her prescription ran out, so she started buying pills on the street. But still, she was taking the pills by mouth. At the time, she says, she never thought she would inject.
And I never, ever would use a needle. Never, I'm never going to do that. Never say never, for one thing. But I started using the needle about, it was around like the 6th of February. So it's just been
a few months.
Yeah. And I'm what? So ashamed. I pack so much shame, and I'm going to cry.
No.
I pack so much shame from it. I do.
Former nurse there on prescription pain pills in Austin, Indiana. Kelly McEvers bringing that back for her new podcast, NPR podcast series, Embedded. She's with us from Culver City, California. We're going to look deeper into the opioid and HIV epidemic in a rural Indiana town, and at embedding, at what we learn when reporters go deep and spend time and take us so intimately into tough spots. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the opioid crisis in an Indiana town. And the new NPR podcast that takes us there, it's called Embedded. Its host, Kelly McEvers of All Things Considered, is with us. You can join us. Have you followed Kelly McEvers reporting over the years from the Middle East and beyond? Are you hungry for this kind of up-close, intimate, textured reporting on the opioid crisis and more? And have you thought about what it means for a reporter to be embedded in war in a drug house on the edge? Kelly is with us from NPR West in Culver City, California. And again, just a note that there is some pretty tough stuff in this podcast, and we're sharing some of it with you here today. Very graphic descriptions of drug use. Here's one right here. Joy, who we just heard, the former nurse, ashamed of her opioid addiction, it looked like. And Jeff here showing Kelly how they cook down this prescription painkiller Opana and inject it. In this clip from Embedded, they had melted away the hard white coating around the Opana pill, the coating that makes it hard to crush and snort or inject.
Now you see the coating of all that mess laying in there still?
Yeah, all that white junk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get rid of the coating or do you just not?
That's what the filter's
for. The filter filters that out. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And that's a piece of a cigarette filter, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Joy puts that cigarette filter right into the liquid. And then Joy, Jeff, and this other guy who's been sitting on the bed, who didn't want us to use his name, they each take turns with their own needle, sticking it into the filter and then pulling that liquid through. And the idea is that the filter will keep the white coating out of the needle. They're really precise about who gets how much, and it all depends on how much money you put on it. So the guy in the bed put the least amount of money down on this pill, so he only gets a little bit. He raises his sleeve, and about 4 inches of one of his veins is this really dark purple color, and on the top is a sore. So he takes the needle, and he injects it into the sore. He asks me if I mind.
I don't mind, if you don't mind.
But he can't get a vein. So he takes the needle out and takes his hand and sandwiches it between his two legs and, like, crosses his legs really tight so the veins in his hand will pop out. There's a bunch of little red marks on his hand where he looks like he's shot before, and he sticks the needle into one of those. Joy and Jeff have both turned their backs to me. while they're doing their hits. And then it just gets really, really quiet.
Kelly McEvers from Embedded, and it doesn't get much more up close than that. And that's just the opioid side of the crisis there. Mm-hmm. Right alongside it, Kelly, of course, the HIV. Here's another Opana addict that you talked to there, Devin. They were reusing needles again and again until they had to resharpen them, sharing these needles. Devin told you people didn't think about the fact that a dirty needle could give you HIV.
We didn't know that there was HIV epidemic going around at the time. That's why we really wasn't too concerned about sharing. We didn't think that we was going to get HIV.
Let's go to Indiana, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Alan is calling. Alan, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Try and get through this. It's kind of emotional just talking about it, but nurses specifically, what you're just talking about, get injured at huge rates, and they get pushed out of hospitals because there's always more younger nurses coming out there, 25, that will fill those spots.
So you're saying injured, like back nurses. Injuries or pain. So you're finding a reason for Joy's Opana, I guess, addiction.
Well, not only that, but there's no support. Like, there's states right now that are trying to eliminate workman's comp that takes care of people. And when these people get hurt and they're poor, what are they going to do? They don't have anything.
But they're crushing up painkillers. I mean, they are abusing the painkiller here, are they not, Alan? I mean, this is for a high. This is more than killing pain. Or am I wrong?
Well, that's not where it starts. I mean, look at pro sports. They don't start addicted. They start trying to get rid of pain.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if I could jump in and talk about Joy. I mean, she was hurt at work. Mm-hmm. She hurt her back at work. She talks about having a sore back and being prescribed by a legitimate doctor painkillers for her hurt back. She hurt it again very badly at work, trying to pick up a man off the floor. NPR actually did a huge investigation mm-hmm. about nurses getting injured at work. We know this is a problem. And it started. It was a slippery slope. It's not like then the next day she started injecting this drug. It was very legitimate prescriptions that she was given by a doctor. Eventually, that doctor stopped prescribing them. And then she was able to go to a pill mill and get prescriptions. Eventually, those prescriptions stopped. Then she started buying it on the street. Then she started crushing it up and snorting, and then she was injecting. So it is a process that people go through. Nobody's saying whether that process is right or wrong, but this is what's happening.
I mean, we take that seriously. Of course, we recall NPR's great reporting on the challenges, physical, not least, that the nurses are facing in a lot of places. But listening to all this in the podcast, mm-hmm. Embedded, I get the feeling that there's definitely more going on. And that's a lot. A work injury is serious, sure. But there's more going on here. There's a sense of a community coming undone. Did you get a feeling from these people about why? Or did you end up feeling, well, this is just the far margins of Austin, Indiana. This isn't representative of a bigger problem. How'd you come down on that?
This is a very poor community. It's a very small community. Austin itself is a town of just over 4,000 people, but we're actually talking about one section of mm-hmm. this town. I mean, it's, you know, you can look at it on a map and just draw a square around it. And inside this very small section of this very small town, there are, according to health officials, there are 500 known drug users. That is a lot. And so you have to think that it has something to do with this community and how isolated it is and the fact that there just aren't that many resources. I mean, one of the questions we wanted to answer also, not just mm-hmm. what is this drug, Opana, but why are people sharing needles? Well, up until this HIV outbreak happened, needle exchanges were illegal in the state of Indiana. And even after the HIV outbreak happened, there are now controlled needle exchanges allowed in the state. At the time, there was a huge rush from officials to come and open a needle exchange in Austin. You know, officials from all over, different departments, called it a one-stop shop. You could go, you could get your needles, you could sign up for state health insurance, you could get a driver's license, you could register for job training, rehabilitation, all kinds of things. That service, even now, even though we're still in the middle of an HIV outbreak, is now only a few hours per day. The big one-stop shop has closed, and it's just a side office in the public health department. There's basically three nurses who, out of the kindness of their hearts, after they finish their regular full-time job at the public health department, go and man this office. So, I mean, we are just talking about a place that just does not have a lot of resources. There is one, total of one, full-time doctor working in this town. A town, again, that is struggling with addiction clearly and is now struggling with HIV. So it's a huge question of resources, and it's a question, I think, of poverty as well.
A town that years and years and years ago, its economy was based on the big forest and big trees there, and then the canning industry, and today, trouble there. You also talked at the drug house and beyond, maybe with Devin and Samantha. Here we come to the HIV portion more. Acutely abusing Opana, three children in a foster home. I'm going to play a little clip here where Samantha's recently been released from prison for what, Kelly?
Jail. She went to jail
excuse me.
On prostitution charges, and she pleaded guilty to those charges.
Related to her drug use and the prostitution? Like, was that because you got to quote somebody earlier in the show, or maybe you say yourself, you know, when the women need resources, they kind of, I forget what you said, do what they have to do. It sounded like you were saying prostitution.
Anecdotally, yes. We were told that many people do resort to prostitution to make money for their drug habit.
She's just out of jail in this clip, and they're both dealing. You can hear them really kind of not going straight at it, but they both have HIV, and they're talking about rehab or treatment for that. Here, Kelly talking with Devin and Samantha.
Do you know what the waiting time is like for the rehab place?
It's usually 4 to 6 weeks.
6 to 8.
6 to 8 weeks.
But they're putting you guys at the front of the list.
Yeah, anybody that's positive or whatever
gets to go to the front of the list. Okay.
They said that you'll probably get in within a week.
So you tested, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you? Have you gone to get the test yet?
Yeah.
And you're positive too?
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't totally hear that, they both said they have tested positive for HIV. Neither one of them has been to see a doctor. I mean, have they talked to you about, like, what kind of medicine you're going to have to take and all that stuff? Have you started taking any medicine?
It's pretty stupid, but I've been waiting on her to get out. I didn't want to be going and getting help and her still being in jail and not getting no kind of treatment. And I've been waiting on her, so we can go do it together.
You guys go do it together. Do you know, has anybody even told you, like, what kind of medicine you have to take for HIV? Because, like, it's not a death sentence anymore. I mean, it's, if you take medicine, you can be fine, especially if you're young like you guys. Are you scared?
A little bit.
Are you?
I mean, yes.
Is it easier to just not think about it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Kelly McEvers from Embedded, I guess, in the drug house there. What did the drug house look like? Describe it for us, Kelly.
It's funny. I don't know if I would actually call it a drug house because it's actually this pretty
house.
Normal house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a yard and a front porch. And the owner of the house, he himself is not involved in drugs at all. He's an older gentleman. His name is Clyde. He was the person we met when we first went to town. Mm-hmm. His son actually had been in some of the media reports as someone who had been one of the early people who sort of publicly said, I'm addicted to this drug, I'm HIV positive. He was away in rehab by the time we got there. And so, yeah, I mean, it's his house. You know, there's it's a four-bedroom house with a, like I said, little brick house with a yard. You know, one of the interesting things, though, about this rehab situation is that there are no rehabilitation facilities in that county, let alone the town. The closest one is the next county over. There are only a handful of beds still today. And as you heard, there's a waiting list. So, you know, this public health nurse that we talked to, who's on the front lines, you know, talking to these addicts every day, she has people come to her every day and say, look, I want to quit. What can I do? Where can I go? And there's just not a bed available if a detox rehab is something that they want.
And Austin, Indiana, dealing with somewhere up toward 200 HIV cases in this small Indiana town. Sharon in Franklin, Tennessee, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, Sharon.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just really have an observation more than anything. My husband's a physician, mm-hmm. and obviously this is something very important to him. The CDC, of course, came out with their recommendations, and he has just decided not to. He's stopping his prescription of opioids or narcotics or anything for pain. But he has shared his frustration with me that, you know, they were told, as he said, we were told this was safe. We were told this was safe. And, you know, he's heartbroken because I'm sure he has and has said he has as much. He probably has people who are addicted. But we don't have a good way of dealing with pain for patients in this country. There are people who have chronic pain who function only through something that reduces that pain. And I have nothing. I have no solutions. I laud what you're doing and the embedment in this and coming to light with this through the media. But it's a conversation that we're having too late, I think, for so many. It was just a comment from a physician's point of view, or at least a family.
I appreciate it, Sharon. And your husband's saying that's enough. He doesn't want to prescribe. Of course, the pain still sits there. In Austin, Indiana now, the consequences of that, plenty of HIV there. Here's a little bit more from Embedded, where Kelly talks with Will Cook in the parking lot of a Cracker Barrel restaurant there, a few towns over from Austin here, because he was concerned about revealing his patients' identities. He's the one full-time doctor in Austin.
When somebody walks in my doors with HIV, I hug them. I'll sit there and hold their hand. I think that's important.
I asked Dr. Cook if he can help people like Devin and Samantha. I'm not totally sure he can.
You know, at first, most people are scared. You know, you have this new diagnosis, and one of the first things you're going to do is deny it. Some people go through a fatalism.
That's where I think they're at, yeah.
Yeah, I'm dead anyway. Why does it matter? And when they come in and they're scared and they're crying and you're just giving them a hug and holding their hand and letting them know that we're there, they just don't even know how to respond to that. They don't trust it. What's the catch?
Almost makes you want to cry from Kelly McKevers, Embedded. Milan in Port Fourchon, Louisiana. Milan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going there?
Okay, what do you know, Milan?
Let's see. Well, I'm actually born and raised in a small fishing town in Alaska called Homer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the exact same problems happening with the town I grew up in, where, you know, people in my town make a lot of money fishing each year, too. So that has a big effect on having a lot of money and nothing to do. But I think it all starts with getting over-prescribed, personally, where I've seen a lot of my friends' parents have back injuries and then get a huge prescription for oxycodone that's way more than they need, and they don't take them all, and then the kids end up getting them, and if the parents are taking them all, then they're getting addicted, and it just gets worse and worse. And then actually I've seen it where people are actually hurting themselves or trying to get hurt on purpose just to get drugs.
It's bigger than Indiana, Milan.
Yep, that's my point. Yeah, I think it's just a trend that we see happening all over, and I think a lot of it falls into the hands of the pharmaceutical company and over-prescribing things. I think we need to just tone it down on how quickly we are to write a prescription to Xanax to a 16-year-old girl or something, you know?
Milan in Louisiana now, out of Alaska, I appreciate your call. I mean, Kelly, are you trying to prescribe here a solution to this, or is Embedded more about helping us really understand the texture of what is?
I think we're going and trying to answer some questions, mostly how did this happen? But, of course, the question arises, what can be done? we didn't sit down with the talking heads and the experts to ask them that. We're going to actually do that. We're continuing to follow up on this story. We've actually done some extensive reporting on the company that makes Opana, Endo Pharmaceuticals. We talk about it a little bit in the podcast, and we're going to talk about it some more tomorrow on All Things Considered. And I think, you know, the question of doctors, I think the CDC is picking up on this now. There are new guidelines. The president's talking about it now. So I think it's finally something that's coming into the national conversation.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the opioid crisis in one Indiana town, Austin, Indiana. It hit the headlines about a year ago. Suddenly, this rural Indiana community was overwhelmed with opioid abuse and an HIV epidemic that followed, up toward 200 cases of HIV, and not in a big town. Kelly McEvers has gone there for the new NPR podcast, Embedded. She's with us today from Culver City, California. How are you thinking about this crisis? What about this kind of reporting, deep, long reporting right from the front? Kelly, stand by. Jake Harper joins us right now from Indianapolis in Indiana. Reports on health for WFYI and Side Effects Media in Indiana. Has done a lot of reporting on opioid abuse, and I know worked with you a bit for Embedded. Jake Harper, thank you very much for being with us. Say hi to Kelly.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kelly.
Jake, what's the case? Here we are a year after this really hit the headlines. Are things better in Austin, Indiana?
Things are improving. I don't know that we can say that. We definitely can't say that they're good, but they're improving. 190 people is the latest official number in terms of how many people have been diagnosed with HIV. And the cases are still trickling in. The state is planning, I think, another round of testing for all the people that have tested negative. They periodically want to go back and retest them, and I think they're probably expecting to find a few more. But that number has definitely slowed from where we were this time last year in terms of how many new cases we were finding.
That's the good news. But Jake, how does a small town like Austin deal with the sudden appearance of 200 cases of nearly of HIV?
That's a good question. I mean, there was a lot of change that was sparked at the state level. The state legalized needle exchanges, and Scott County was the first one to get one up and running with a lot of help from the state and some outside organizations. But, you know, it's going to be a slow process. I think that the needle exchanges helped slow the spread of the HIV virus, but there are still, you know, as Kelly mentioned, there are about 500 people who are estimated to abuse drugs in Austin, and that's, I think, for most people I've talked to, that's a low estimate. So they're really not even reaching all the people that need to be reached and helped with both addiction treatment and other sorts of health services.
Kelly, you worked with Jake on this episode of Embedded. I mean, you were out there in the drug house, but what about the town fathers and mothers here? How are they looking at the challenge of what now lives in their midst?
You know, we talked to some people, and it was interesting. Some people have had a real change of heart, especially in terms of law enforcement. I think there was a time when not only were needle exchanges illegal, but even possessing a needle was a crime that that law enforcement used to try to enforce and try to stop the use of drugs in this community. I think law enforcement has taken a different approach to this, which is really interesting to understand that if you keep throwing people in jail and nothing else happens, you're not going to end the problem. So I think there's a lot of conversation at least going on at the level of law enforcement to think about what can be done while people are in jail and what kind of follow-up programs can happen afterward. But I think that community is actually still divided. I think something like a needle exchange is still really controversial. This is a place where people think that needle exchanges only encourage drug use, only condone it, and that is just something that people can't stop. So I think it's the kind of thing that's a longer-term conversation. I mean, when you present people with the science and say, look, needle exchanges prevent not only HIV, but hepatitis C, which we see in large numbers in these communities, not just Austin, but in other places in Indiana, other places across the U.S., a lot of times it's a precursor, a warning sign that there could be an HIV outbreak. When you present people with the science, sometimes they say, look, but that just doesn't override the moral question of you know, quote-unquote, encouraging people to do drugs.
We've got Seth writing to us on Twitter, we need to stop criminalizing people who are struggling with addiction. They need love and support, not a jail. You can link to Embedded, Kelly McKevers' podcast, at our website, onpointradio.org, and to Jake Harper's terrific reporting out of Austin, Indiana. A link there as well. Catherine in New York, Syracuse, New York. Thank you for calling, Catherine. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. This is an excellent show. I was a physician who trained at Bellevue Hospital in NYU in New York City from 78 to 85 when the heroin epidemic had already gotten off to a very good start in the 70s. The single most important thing you can do to put a halt to the spread of HIV, which hit us in 1980, is the Clean Needle Exchange Program. It's an emergency program that can be put into use in an emergency room, in pharmacies, in back rooms of churches, volunteer clinics. It will stop the spread of HIV. And you have to make these clean needles available to people as soon as possible. It's the one most important thing to do first. The Gay Men ACT UP group in New York City was very important in their activities to beg for clean needles, and it took years, and we lost hundreds of thousands and ultimately millions of lives because of the lack of clean needles.
There in New York, now we're talking Austin, Indiana. Catherine, I appreciate your call. Jake Harper, where does that stand? I think I've seen headlines just in the last couple of days about the Indiana legislature, maybe on the exchange front.
The legislature last year legalized needle exchanges, but this year I'm not aware of any activity that took place. We're still sort of in this space where there are about 23 counties, I think, that have sort of said we want a needle exchange. We recognize that at a certain level, they've recognized that they have a drug problem and a hepatitis C problem, which is often a precursor indicator that there's drug use going on. And it's hard for these counties to get through the full process. Only four counties so far across the state have been approved by the state to start a needle exchange, and then even then there's no funding to get those up and running from the state, so they have to find outside sources for that. And a lot of these communities are like we've been saying are very poor and don't have those resources at hand to put toward a needle exchange. So it's very difficult to get those started.
Boy, a needle exchange sounds just dirt cheap compared to an HIV outbreak and all the treatment
exactly.
that follows on that front. Neil in Laverne, Tennessee. Neil, you're on the air with Kelly McKevers and Jake Harper.
Hi. My ex-wife is from Austin. I've been there times over the last 25 years. I'm wondering what the impact might be on training to help them.
Oh, we're just breaking up badly there. But Neil says his ex-wife's family is from Austin, Indiana. He's been going there for 25 years. The impact on the town? Jake, Kelly, who wants to jump on that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear. The impact of what?
I guess of the opioid abuse epidemic there, the HIV epidemic that has come on the heels of that. And maybe I'll just add here my own question of the kind of attention that the town has received. I mean, is it having an effect on the way the town perceives itself, the resources that are coming to it, the way it's grappling with these problems?
I think absolutely. I mean, we've seen even Brittany Combs, the public health nurse who had been working in the county for years before this HIV outbreak, she was barely aware of the drug problem that was going on in Austin until the HIV outbreak. And since then, her world has basically been turned upside down. Her job has changed dramatically. Like Kelly said, she puts in a lot of her own time just on a volunteer basis, driving around the town and handing out needles to people who need them. And she's had to do a total 180 in terms of her views on syringe exchange. She previously would have said that she was against it, and she's now a very enthusiastic advocate of that program. And I think, you know, as Kelly said too, the law enforcement has come around on this issue. Even the prosecutor in Scott County is very for these types of programs. And I, you know, there are definitely signs of change going on in among the town and also in the healthcare, among the healthcare professionals there.
Lots of attention paid here, not least today with the release of the first episode of Embedded, focused entirely on Austin, Indiana. Christina, Fort Knox, Kentucky. Christina, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a military wife, and I have to agree with the gentleman up in Alaska that it's everywhere. We've been to numerous duty stations, and it's just within the military as well. And it's easy to, I mean, opiates are reserved for the military members over the dependents, hands down. Where do we stop handing out opioids and addressing the issue medically before we get to that point?
Yeah. And again, the testimony there from Christina, who's lived all over military, Kelly, that it's everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. plenty of people online saying, oh, Big Pharma has an interest in this. You know, there are drivers here that are profit-oriented.
Right.
I mean, how do you look at the drivers, having spent time there in the midst of it?
I mean, one of the things, like I said, we took a look at was the company that makes this pill, Opana Endopharmaceuticals. My colleague Tom Dreisbach did a lot of reporting on their decision to reformulate this drug, right? I mean, the decision was to make it resistant to abuse. And in doing that, whether or not it was an unintended consequence, people stopped snorting it and started injecting it. And that is what we can trace now to this HIV outbreak. So wow. I think you have to ask a lot of questions. We asked a lot of questions of the company. They declined to be interviewed. They sent us a few statements that said that they're committed to safety. But when we looked into these decisions to reformulate, one of the things we found was that when a company reformulates like this, they are able to block generic competition. And in one of their own statements, the company itself said that that was a $135 million decision.
Jay Carper, you've done great reporting on this as well. Is Austin alone in Indiana? Is it, you know, the one place where it all blew up, or are there a bunch of other towns with comparable problems?
I think the problem is pretty widespread. I think Austin was a warning sign for a lot of places across Indiana and across the country. The issue with Opana and how HIV spread may be a little bit unique, but I think, you know, there are places everywhere that are afraid of a similar problem of HIV coming in and spreading very rapidly among people who inject drugs. And indicated by the number of counties that have said we want a needle exchange, I think it's very clear that Austin is not alone in Indiana or, you know, in around the country from all the stories that keep pouring in about the opioid addiction epidemic.
Jake Harper with WFYI joining us from Indianapolis today. He helped out with the production of the first episode of Embedded. Jake, thank you so much for being with us for a minute today. Great to have you, and good luck to you and Indiana on this front. Not only Indiana, I guess, but certainly including. Thank you, Jake, for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Robin in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on with Kelly McEvers, Robin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having this show. I think this is a good intersection of healthcare, culture, or politics. For too many years in our country and still today, public health is underfunded. Physicians continue to deal and manage, well, all providers, with addiction or pain improperly. They violate the warning labels and the manufacturing recommendations. It's not to continue prescribing opioids for pain. There are other ways to deal with pain that we don't use. And conservative policies are failing our society in these regards, banning needle exchanges, states who have inadequate education, wanting this abstinence and not teaching how HIV and all of the other diseases are transmitted. And I applaud Kelly for embedding, because I feel like it helps to put a face on these people and their plight, and maybe break down these walls of intolerance that our society and a lot of politicians have put up that keeps us isolated.
Robin, I appreciate your call. I appreciate it very much. Kelly McEvers, you've reported a lot for a long time. You know what it's like to go and report quickly on something when that's required sometimes. And you know what it's like to really spend time. I mean, we remember well your reports out of Syria, Iraq, the Middle East, the Arab Spring. What about the value? And I'm sure you'll be rolling out more locations for us here, but the value of spending the time. What difference does it make ultimately? I mean, we got the headline. We know that Austin, Indiana had hundreds of opioid addicts and almost 200 HIV cases. We know that. But here you've embedded. What do you bring us?
I think that it's just the ability to stand in other people's shoes, to try to just spend 20, 30 minutes taking yourself out of your own world and standing in their world. Maybe you can't imagine being a nurse and hurting your back and eventually injecting a drug, but maybe you can. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's something that's closer to your experience than you realized. And maybe that empathy will make you think differently about something when it's all said and done. That's really the goal.
Where else are you heading with Embedded?
We are trying to get Embedded. I think saying we're embedded is a little is maybe a little too optimistic with some of these stories. We try to get Embedded with bikers in Texas after a big shootout in Waco. And you may remember that from the headlines. There was that big shootout in the parking lot. We embed with sort of the reporters on the front lines of the gang war in El Salvador. We embed with doctors, Doctors Without Borders. We're going to do some lighter ones as well. We're going to embed with some folks who make negative political ads during this presidential campaign. We're going to embed in a writer's room of a late night comedy show to understand this question of, that we're all talking about, of diversity in Hollywood. So it's just taking things that you've seen swirling around in the news and going in deep and trying to answer a bunch of questions.
Well, we like to go deep here at On Point, and you're going deep with Embedded. We're going to partner up a little bit over the next few months to bring more of these conversations as your reporting comes to light, and I'm really looking forward to that. Listeners, if you want to listen to the first Embedded episode, you can find a link at our website, onpointradio.org. We'll go next month with Kelly, I think, to the murder capital of the world, San Salvador, as she says, in El Salvador. Kelly McEvers, we've loved your reporting for a long time, and it's great getting a little taste of it today and talking with you about this very important story. Good luck with your reporting. Thanks for being with us today. We'll talk again.
Thank you so much. Such an honor.
Kelly McEvers, co-host of All Things Considered, host of Embedded. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.